This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and this is going to be episode number 39 of Within the Trenches, and I'm sitting here with my co-host Whitney. What's going on?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back for episode 39.
It has been a week, and it has been an interesting week. Probably not as interesting as yours. You were telling me earlier you've had a couple of crappy calls while I've just been in my office slash bedroom coding, and my eyes have been going cross-eyed, so... How about you tell me about your day or your couple shifts?
Yeah, I guess just my only bad shift or my memorable one was last night. And it was super crummy. It was our standard 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. shift. And I was call taking. And I tell you what, man, every time I answered the phone, it was something big and bad.
Really?
I pulled out my CPR cards on more than one occasion. Excuse me. The first one was a mom who had been ill. Her son, who was about my age. Had called, and she was just sick and not alert. She was still breathing. And just as I could hear the ambulance pulling up in the driveway, she stopped breathing.
Oh, geez.
So that was like one of those crummy things that you're kind of listening while the paramedics are getting in there.
Right.
And you're just hearing everything, and you just feel helpless on the other end of the phone. Like, you know, what if I would have had them be more alert? Or what if I would have checked for agonal breathing more
times? Yes, of course.
I listened back to it. I checked for agonal breathing like 36 times. So I know that I did enough, but it's still that feeling of just what if.
Of course.
The second one was the worst one. It was a dad who found his son who had overdosed, and he was in that agonal breathing, and just paramedics got there pretty quick and hit him with some drugs really fast and took off priority one to downtown to the hospital. But still, that's one of those ones where you just feel so helpless because, you know, the dad is screaming for help and doesn't know what to do and
Right. Had
to kick the door in, and you just want to crawl through the phone and like grab him by the face and say, "We're going to do this together. Stop. Listen to me. I promise you I'm here to help you." But I got him. We were okay by the end of it. He was listening. And so anyways, go back in tonight for only 4 hours. And then I'm off for 2 days before I start our long weekend. So fingers crossed.
Oh,
it's just
man.
A relaxing Wednesday, which I'm sure we're going to have a plane crash, 7 homicides, and a tanker explode.
But, right.
You know.
That's always the worst case scenario. But, you know, as dispatchers, you're equipped to be able to do that. And it's weird for me to say, because I almost said we, and I can't say
take
that.
It back.
I know. I can't say that. And you know, I was telling Carl this the other day that when we did our last episode and we were talking about stuff, and I was saying when I was doing this, I felt it was funny because I felt like one of those old creepy dudes who graduated from high school, went to college for a year, and come back and go to the high school party. That's how I felt.
Why? Is it because I'm drinking Burnett's and a slushie right now?
You feel
like you're at a high school party?
Mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah. Yeah, it was weird. Slaughter. It was awkward, man. But I felt off, like I wasn't part of the crew anymore.
It made me feel sad every time you'd say it, I think. Dang it.
Well,
your new job sucks.
Yeah. It's been good, but...
But you look like you're okay.
Yes.
You do need to shave, I've noticed.
Yeah, I am getting a little, I'm looking like the bounty guy.
You look like Team Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But other than that.
Getting a little furry there, yeah. But yes, other than that, it's been good. It's been a complete change. My blood pressure is actually down.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And my acid reflux is pretty much about gone, which
oh
is
gosh.
Very weird to say, yeah. It was
yeah,
the job.
Been struggling with acid reflux for as long as I can remember.
I know a lot of using the restroom. But anyway, and this episode we have a special guest. And actually, just from the start of this, from the Kickstarter project and everything, he had been sending messages saying, you know, I would love to be on this. I'd love to be on this. And everything blew up so fast, and everything was going crazy that. We were sending emails back and forth to each other, and I was like, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. Well, we're finally doing this. So I apologize for not doing this sooner. But today on this episode, we have Daniel, who is with Presidio County Sheriff's Office, and is from the west portion of Texas. How's it going, man?
Good. How are y'all?
We're great.
We are good. And he did the y'all,
too.
He
did it again.
Yes. That's awesome.
Sometimes I wish I had an accent so bad that I think I walk through my own house just saying stuff like y'all, and I'm going to go put food on the Barbie. And
you mix them all up.
Yeah, I just put them all together. I guess it's not so much of an accent as these cool little slang words that if right. I set it up here, I would get the stink eye from somebody and they'd be like, are you for real?
All right.
Dan, we're really glad to have you here. I know you have a lot of great stories, and I'm just really excited. So thanks again for giving us a little bit of your time.
Yes.
No problem. I'm
so
excited.
How long? Good. How long have you been in dispatch? How long have you been dispatching for?
I actually just hit my 1 year on August the 3rd.
Man, 1 year. And Whitney was actually reading something on your blog. So you're 1 year in and you're a CTO. Is that correct?
Yes. And I guess we can kind of segue into what our comp center is like. I want to kind of give you all some information on our county and our comp center.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I work in Presidio County, which is in the far western portion of Texas. Our entire population of the county is only 7,000 to about 7,500 people. And wow. So there are not a whole lot of people in our county. We're consolidated mm-hmm. with the county that is north of us, which is Jeff Davis County, and they have about 2,500 people. So all in all, we dispatch, our jurisdiction has about 10,000 people in it. But that is spread over about 6,100 square miles.
Gee, so when we say rural, we're talking rural.
Yes, I mean you don't get much further out in the middle of nowhere than out here. It definitely is out in the middle of nowhere. So it's
wow,
it's interesting in our comm center because at all times there is only one dispatcher, and the dispatcher is the call taker.
Ah, so is there one on at a time then?
There is one on at a time, and we work a 12-hour rotating shift. So, you know, when it hits the fan, it hits the dispatcher, and they're basically the only one that gets it, you know?
Right.
Are you also responsible for running, we call it lean traffic, but I guess that would be all of like your NCIC, your warrants, your driver status, all that kind of stuff. Do you do that as well, or are most of your deputies or officers pretty independent in that, or do they get good coverage where they can run it from their cars?
No, we run everything for everybody in the county. We have a couple of different agencies. We have the Presidio County Sheriff's Office and the Jeff Davis County Sheriff's Office, and then we have a Presidio Police Department. And within those three, you know, you'll only have anywhere between maybe 3 and 7 officers on at a time. But they run all of their traffic through dispatch.
Holy wow. crap. So you can't really tell them to stand by anywhere. Or, I mean, I guess you can. You're the yeah. only one there. If you got to be taking phone calls too.
Right. And the officers are pretty good about knowing when we're busy. You know, it's rural, but it's small town rural, so everybody kind of knows what's going on. So if there's something going on in one part of the county, more than likely the officers that are, you know, in the other part of the county are knowing about it and, you know, kind of backing down on traffic and things like that.
That's really nice that you have that. Now, when you say small town, oh, no, I know what I was going to ask you. It's the question that everybody always wants to know if you're a single dispatcher in a comm center. Do you take a portable and a headset with you to the bathroom?
Actually, we don't have to. We have the luxury, but it's also kind of an awkward luxury of having the bathroom inside of the dispatch room. And so it's just the bathroom is a corner room of the dispatch center.
See, we have that too. Like we have within our comm center, we have like the pee-pee bathroom. You can't do the poo-poos in there.
Right.
But it's the bathroom that you can quick run into and then come back out. But still, I guess we can be higher volume, much higher volume, at least in your department. So I guess if you can sneak away, I guess you can hear the phone or you can't.
We kind of find our times in the day when we know it's dead or we hope it's going to be dead so we can run to the bathroom really quick. So they don't make us take the headset or the radio to the bathroom. But at the same time, it's not a place to sit and read the newspaper.
Right. Right, especially if you get an open mic or something. That would be yes. That would be interesting. Oh, man. No, I definitely know how you feel, because when I first started dispatching, I was dispatching in Florida for a small police department, and we worked 8-hour shifts, but it was just one dispatcher, too, doing everything. And whenever we had to use the bathroom, we would have to key up on the radio to the officer, and it was frostproof. So it would be like frostproof to 7-4 or whatever. You know, I'm going to be 10-7 down the hall. So everybody always knew, and the chief was always listening to the radio. So if it took too long, because we'd have to say back in at the radio or whatever, we'd have to say that we were back. And if we took too long, the chief would call up and just start giving us a bunch of crap about it. Like,
could you not, though? That would be awesome if a dispatcher said, I mean, I know it's something that everybody has to do. And
yeah,
but it's still, it's so terrible that you had to announce it. And then I know how long you're in the bathroom. I worked with you for years. You'd be out of service for like 45 minutes.
Exactly.
Your poor officer's on the road.
Yeah, well, and then it was just a window that people could walk into the police department.
You had walk-up traffic,
yeah,
too.
It was walk-up traffic. Right. So there would be some times where I would hear, hello, is anybody around here?
No.
We were like, oh, crap. I was like, got to hurry up. Then I'd run out and they'd say, you were in the bathroom. I was like, yeah, let's not embarrass me any more than I already am. What do you need?
The college department that I worked at when I was in college, that's kind of like stupid sounding. you had to take a portable and a headset in there with you.
Wow.
So I obviously didn't want to take the portable in the stall with me.
Right.
But I'd leave it out there and it was terrible. Only one time did I ever have to answer a 911 call while I was in there. But yeah, I think it was like at the point where I was walking back up to my counsel or something like
right.
that. I wasn't actually still using the bathroom, but still, it's just one of those things where you have to really rely on your knowledge of trying to remember your address. Because how are you going to tell a 911 caller, stand back? No, I got to wash my. No, I was just peeing. No, just ma'am, just a minute.
Yeah, hold on a minute.
I got to wash my hands.
Did you have to Lysol everything afterwards?
Yeah,
the portable and stuff.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah.
Purell it.
Those Clorox wipes. Are you kidding me? You see, I use those all the time, anyways.
That's true.
I use them on you guys in dispatch.
So. Yeah. So, going back to your dispatch career and all, and you said you just hit that 1-year mark. So, what got you into wanting to dispatch in the first place?
I actually started out dispatching for the local college that I attend, and there it was just it wasn't any actual really police traffic. It was more like dispatching on locks and motorist assists, and we were the campus operator, so we transferred a whole bunch of phone calls. And so the position opened up at the local sheriff's office, and I thought I'd give it a shot. And I'd always wanted to be a radio dispatcher, maybe 2 or 3 years prior to getting into the job. It was something that I had always wanted to do. And I, you know, the opportunity opened up and I took it, and here I am a year later, you know, a 911 dispatcher.
And you're digging it still for sure?
Most definitely. I'd always told myself I wanted to find a job that I knew I would enjoy for a long time. And I had wanted to, you know, I was good at working with computers, so I wanted to work with computers, and that didn't work out so well because I don't like math, and, you know, being a computer engineer needs math. And, I thought I wanted to be a psychologist, and I figured I don't want to know why people do what they do. I just want to help them,
figuring out what they did.
Right. In a way, I guess it was more the whole, you know, learning that this chemical does this in the brain and, you know, that's what makes people do this. You know, it was just, that was too much for me. And I guess I kind of found the happy medium in dispatching, and that's why I've enjoyed it so much.
I have to ask you about your transition between college dispatching and being a 911 dispatcher. Did you guys take like parking ticket complaints and stuff like that too at your department?
Yes, we did.
I have found that people who get a $20 parking citation on a college campus can be some of the nastiest people I've ever spoken with in my entire life.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. We had people come in all the time, and I mean, raising all sorts of problems and coming in and yelling and, you know, screaming over the fact that they were parked in the handicap spot when they shouldn't have been, and right. expect us to take responsibility for that problem. It was horrible sometimes.
I would find myself saying, hey, I've been here for 4 years and I've gotten 3 tickets myself and I work here. Everybody yes. gets them. If you park like a jerk, you're going to get a ticket.
Yes.
Anyway, so now transitioning into your comm center now, what were some of your first calls? I found myself being really like, every time the red line would show up on our E911 screen, I would always get a little bit nervous and think, this is the real deal. I'm not going to be, you know, we would have some medical stuff like that that we would transfer off to the ambulances. But what about your first couple of calls and dispatch? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind where you thought, this is it, I'm really a 911 dispatcher, it's go time?
It's funny you say that. The first day that I was, quote unquote, in the hot seat, you know, my CTO was still in there, but she was, you know, on the computer, just kind of letting me do my thing. And I was running traffic and, you know, NCIC, yada, yada. And the 911 line goes off and she looks at me and she says, it's yours. And I said, okay. So I pick up the handset and the first words I hear out of the person on the other side are, my house is on fire. And oh, at nice. That point, I said, this means he needs the fire department. And it was, you know, nerve wracking because I had just started and trying to remember the process of what information. And, you know, the CTO jumped in and dispatched the fire department so I could get more information from the person on the call. You know, that definitely was it was literally one of the first calls I ever took. And it was probably one of the scariest I had ever taken as well.
Yeah, and for people who aren't 911 dispatchers, you aren't just figuring out that their house is on fire. You want to know if it's a bi-level, if it's a ranch, if there's any ammunition or explosives anywhere in the house. I mean, there's a lot of information that we gather for the safety, mostly for the safety of the fire department, but also to help ensure a faster response. So you're right, there's so much you have to ask. And when people's houses are on fire, that's not usually the time they just want to sit and hang out and talk on the phone and answer some questions in a really relaxed environment.
They're right.
usually yelling to you. So yeah, when they talk about trial by fire, you didn't just get like a little PDA, like a little two car accident with no injuries. You had a fully involved house fire.
Yeah, I had a fully involved house fire. And, you know, and he started, and he was pretty good about getting me information. You know, he told me where he lived and, you know, he told me that he had some ammunition in a shed in the back that, you know, if the fire jumped, it would catch fire. Yeah. So it was just, you know, it was hectic. And, you know, by the time I knew it, you know, the fire department had arrived and, you know, the call was disconnected. And I, you know, living in a rural area, you know, even though I'm in a rural area, I never found out what happened with the house or anything. So it was, yeah, it was definitely one of those just kind of cut the cord and that's it.
You know, sometimes those are the best calls to take, especially when you get something like that, or, you know, you have to give CPR because you don't have that time to, you know, kind of dwell on it a little bit so that it doesn't affect you. So that's always good to be able to just jump to the next call.
Most definitely. And I found that, you know, living in a small town, you know, and dispatching in a small community in a rural jurisdiction, you know, whenever I see the 911 light up and it ends up being, you know, somebody that I know in town, I almost feel, you know, and I know I shouldn't, but I almost feel a little bit more personal responsibility for what happens in that call. A call I took a couple of weeks ago, actually, I, you know, answered the 911, what is your emergency? And the first words out of the caller's mouth were, Daniel, is that you? And it kind of scared me. I have never had that happen before. And I said, yes. It is. What is your emergency? And, you know, the lady ended up telling me that it was, you know, her and she was from church. You know, she was the one from church and, you know, she had grown up with my grandmother. She was her best friend in high school. And so it was, you know, I just felt like it put a little bit more pressure on me to make sure that everything got done properly during the call.
Oh, that's good, though, that she had you. Those have got to be the times, though, where you feel like I'm doing this for the right reasons. There's, you know, divine intervention somewhere, a higher power that's saying you need to do this because you're being helpful and so forth. So that's always a good reminder to have.
Was she able to stay calm with you?
You know, I think she was, and I ended up seeing her a couple of weeks later, and you know, she remembered the call, and I had kind of, you know, pushed it to the back of my mind, but she remembered, and you know, she thanked me for helping her, and she said, "I was glad it was you because, you know, it made me feel like it made me feel more comfortable, you know, and it made me feel good. It kind of a personal validation, you know, that what I was doing was a good thing, and that what I had done was something that was able to help her out."
Oh, that's good, and that's always a you know a hard decision too. At least you know in your situation, you know, she called you out right away. But when I was working in Allegan, the West Side is where I grew up in, and I knew a lot of the people. So I would talk to some people, and sometimes there would be that decision where, okay, do I say my name to see if they're gonna remain calm or become more calm, or if I say my name and who I am, are they gonna get embarrassed and then not say anything at all? And you know, it's hard to do that sometimes.
And plus, people knew you by a different name. You know, like your name's Ricardo. We call you Ricky at work, but
yeah,
growing up, people called you Rich.
Right. Yep.
And that's what your wife calls you, and that's kind of your name that everybody's known you by. So when you mm-hmm. answer the phone as Ricardo, sometimes he would look at us and be like, "I know this guy. I went to high school with him.
Yeah.
Look up his mugshot." Like, right. But yeah, they wouldn't know it was you, and you'd kind of be in this awkward. You could tell you were like, you knew all about their spouse and all about their yeah. marital problems because you grew up with them your whole lives. And then you had to just kind of play through it all. Like,
yeah.
Dan, have you run into anybody else that you know on the phone, anything like that, being a small town dispatcher? Or not so much? Is it still spread out enough?
I have, but it hasn't been, you know, anything really dire or anything, you know, really, really emergent. It's normally been like, you know, I've had indigestion for the past couple of hours, and you know, I feel like I need to go to the hospital, and you know, I'm not able to drive myself. And so, you know, it hasn't ever really been a major call that I've had to, you know, deal with somebody that I know on a very personal basis like that. So it's remained pretty spread out in terms of how many people that have called in that I actually know personally.
That's good, because I have a friend that I went to school with, and every time we hang out when I was working in dispatch, he would say, "Oh, Rich, you know everybody's dirty little secrets over there in town."
And that's really, that reminds me, Daniel, about one of the posts that you put from the 911 Life in the Hot Seat book. You referenced that author saying the same thing. I think it was one of your posts in April where you had said you opened up your blog post with something like, you know, she mentions that when she drives through town at the end of her shift, she knows all these dirty little secrets at everybody's houses. And that's not, I don't think most dispatchers are proud of that, because you kind of want to believe that you live in this great community and whatnot, but you know a whole lot.
Most definitely. You know, when I was reading that book, you know, the words that she used and the way she expressed her feelings and put them on paper was amazing, because I found myself reading and it was like, you know, every other sentence was, you know, I was literally shaking my head yes, because that's, you know, how I felt. And that was one of the things that really stood out, was, you know, knowing that I drove by this house when I went to work, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody, you know, had a heart attack at this house, and now I'm driving home from work, and, you know, I know what happened there, but, you know, it's just, it's knowledge that I wish I didn't have. And I guess one other thing is that we're also attached to the county jail. And so we also process some of their paperwork. And so we see and hear even more things that happen on that end. So there's a lot of things that, you know, I wish that I didn't know, but I just do because of what I do.
Is that why you use your blog as like a kind of a, I don't know how you want to call it, kind of a kickstand? It seems like it's a really great place for you to vent on it. It's very professional, though. I like how there's a little bit of swearing in there. I have a terrible foul mouth when we're not
She
recording.
Does. She's nasty.
But I like that. But I like that it's just kind of, it's very real. It's definitely not safe for work or anything like that. You can read anywhere. But it's just very, I just appreciate the humor behind it. And mm-hmm. it's very tasteful, too. Is that what you go to when you really need?
I found that the blog, I started it on the night shift, and it was at first just kind of a way to pass the time and give me something to do. But as I furthered along in my career in dispatching, I found that it has become more of an outlet of putting it out there, you know, things that I go through and being able to share that with people without really having to share it with anybody. It is telling people exactly what happened, but them still having no idea what really went on, where it went on, who it affected. But it, I feel like it kind of takes some of the pressure off of me and allows me to kind of move on from, you know, difficult things or things that bother me or things that, you know, are funny or things that are sad.
And during that time too, is that when you started doing the, was it the, I can't remember the exact name. It was Nighttime Dispatch Radio or Dispatch Radio. What was it again now?
Yes, it was Nighttime Dispatch Radio, and that was where that idea kind of came about as well. Living in a small town means that everything closes by 10 p.m. except the convenience store, which is only open until midnight. And so it's not like, you know, I lived in a big city where I could go grocery shopping at night and, you know, find people to hang out with at night and, you know, do things that were mildly productive at night. Doing the radio show kind of became my way of keeping myself entertained on my days off. And even on days that I was working that were, you know, the middle of winter and absolutely nothing was going on. And I actually had worked at a radio station before, at the local NPR affiliate, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, what better way to be able to kind of entertain people and, you know, bring people together than to, you know, put on a radio show and let them hear music and, you know, kind of connect with people in a different way.
Right.
I wish we were recording Ricardo and I with our camera. We do that every once in a while. Because the second you said you were partnered up with a local NPR affiliate, we both did fist pumps because we're both NPR nerds.
Yeah.
Like, are you really? Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, with the whole, you know, the radio thing that you were doing, you had picked up a nice fan base. I know there were a few times at work, Whitney and I would be on the same side, and we even listened a few times, mm-hmm. and, you know, we were listening to you and the music, and then we'd go onto your page, and we'd see all these requests that people were bringing up, and then you ended up going to mornings, right? You got moved to mornings, and you had to stop,
yes.
Or...
I got moved to day shift. I was so upset about it. And I've been wanting to start it up again, but it's really hard to find people who are willing to, you know, kind of put forth the commitment. And at the same time, I don't want it to be a radio station that I pre-record all of this stuff and it ends up being me talking and playing music and no interaction. I kind of feel like that's,
right.
You know, selling the station to people and, you know, selling it to them short and selling myself short as well. But we had an interesting situation where we ended up going down to three dispatchers. We had two people quit almost simultaneously. And so I got kicked up to mornings and we were on 8-hour shifts, 7 days a week for about 2 weeks. And then after that, we had somebody hired and I had to go to training for a week and I came back and I was on day shift. And so it just, you know, it kind of died out really quickly and I felt so horrible that it had to happen that way.
Yeah, because we saw that you had put out there, you know, what it was going on and everyone kept saying, come back, do it again. It's like, he's on days now. I don't know. Yeah. That would be pretty hard to do.
Yeah, most definitely. But, you know, I have considered bringing it back and I can never get enough interest built up in, you know, some people wanting to come forward and do it, I would most definitely welcome doing it again. But it's definitely a lot of fun and it was a nice way to connect with people on a different level, but at the same time, mm-hmm. the kind of the same general knowledge that we were all in this situation together.
Well, hopefully from people listening to this episode, once I post it up later today, maybe you might just get some interest there because, I mean, this will be everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I sure hope so.
Well, going into the wrap up of this episode here, there's something that I wanted to talk about, and not just with you, but you know, the three of us to see, just to talk about this. Recently, something has come up where Haleyville, Alabama, is the home of 911. It's where the very first 911 call was received, and it was February 16th, 1968. And this was at the city hall there. Well, there's this petition going around to try to stop this development. There's someone out there who wants to tear this place down and build a pharmacy. I won't say the name of it because I don't want to get sued. Mm-hmm. But what do you guys think about that? I mean, this is where 911 began, don't you? I would think, and I would have thought already that it was something that was, you know, preserved, you know, because it's part of history.
Dan, go ahead.
Well, I feel like it is a part of our history, and a lot of people don't realize how much of an impact the start of this 911 emergency service had on the entire nation. You know, before it used to be, you had to call the local police department to have them call somebody on the local ambulance team to have them go to your house. Now there's no guessing. It takes the guesswork out of if you're in a bind and you need somebody quick, you know that 911 is going to be there always, you know, whether you're on a cell phone or a house phone, you know that that is going to be there. And I feel like, you know, the destruction of this building or the changing of this building into a pharmacy or whatever they want to make it, it would take away from the history. It would take away from what we are and what we have become, you know, in the span of 40 or 50 years that 911 has been going. I wish and hope that they would keep it around, because I think it's a good reminder of, you know, kind of where we started and what it has brought about for the entire nation, really.
Right. What about you, Whit?
I don't know. I kind of feel devil's advocate-y right now, only because I am a true supporter of 911, and I am spot on with Dan when he said the reliability of 911. Mm-hmm. That's so important for it's universal, no matter where you're at. Well, I should say here in the nation, 911 is accessible. The only thing I noticed, though, when I was researching is it said that the building could cost up to $1 million. For some serious upgrades it needs. So,
really?
Yeah, that's the thing I was reading on there, and I thought, do you want to put that on this small town? You know, what does their budget look like? Do they have money? They might have a bunch of extra money sitting somewhere for repairs, and instead the city just wants to kick it loose to this pharmacy. But I don't know. I think that would be something that had to be looked into. If it's, you know, the repairs are vital to the structure of the building, something that's going to be really expensive. I don't know, though, because then I feel bad saying that, because it is such a monumental, historic place for right. all the 911 professionals out there. And for anybody that's ever had to use 911 and has had a good experience.
Exactly. No, and I was looking at the pictures, and it looks as though everything is set up the way it was. I mean, they have the first 911 call that was made from this telephone. They have it here in this picture.
Oh, do they?
It's in a case. And the person who's actually running this, I won't say her last name, but her first name is Valerie. I actually sent her an email last night to see if I could get permission to, you know, mention her website and this petition that she's trying to do and all. And she was all about it. She actually sent me a page and a half long email on it. And it looks like, to go along with what you were saying with the repairs, there is, I guess, a rather bad leak where the main dispatch portion was. And that's one of the things they're trying to fix, and everything is kind of up in the air, but still kind of moving along with it getting demolished. So I guess, you know, this really is just to help her spread the word. The website is savethehomeof911.com. And she also has a Facebook page, Twitter, and on top, right when you go to the website, there's all these links. There's a photo gallery, contact for her. I mean, there's a contact to the website, but she also puts her actual personal email address on there for people to contact her if anybody, you know, wants to help her out or anything like that. And there's also the mayor petition and the 911 petition. And the mayor one, once you sign it and put, you know, any message on there, it goes directly to him. And so there you go. Anybody listening to this right now, you know, check that out. And also definitely check out Dan. Thank you very much, Dan, for being on this episode with us. Smalltowndispatcher.blogspot.com. And do you have that on Facebook too, or no?
I don't yet, but I need to get a page started. So if I do that, I will let y'all know definitely.
All right. Awesome.
Thanks again for your time, Dan. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank y'all for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to put up all your links and everything on the blog post, and that'll go on to thejabberlog.com, and I should have that posted a little later today, but Yeah, people who are listening to this right now, check out his blog. It's got some good stuff on. There's some good calls. If you ever wanted to know about dispatch, this is the kind of stuff that we're talking about here. But for anybody who has any comments, questions, concerns, anything like that, you can always email the show, thejcast@thejabberlug.com, as well as wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's at @WTTPodcast. And also you can find us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And if you happen to go onto the Jabberlug store and you want to save yourself some money on any of the Within the Trenches shirts or anything else on there, put the promo code GET10, and that's all caps, G-E-T, and then the number 10, and that'll save you 10% on everything else. So also make sure to check out thejabberlug.com, where all of this stuff is going to be posted, and we'll see you guys later. Have a good one.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlug.com.